The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
We'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article by Nancy Brakey. Saucer magnolia tree, a lovely early bloomer. Blooms really popped out in the past few days, brightening the scene with lovely spring colors that stand out against the late winter landscape. I think one of the best of these early bloomers is the saucer magnolia, a medium-sized tree that unfolded its blooms almost overnight. This is such a joy to see, not forgetting the bridal wreath spireas, forsythias, star magnolias, daffodils, redbuds, and camellias that also make this a beautiful time of year. And the saucer magnolia brings not only beautiful flowers, but a lovely tree well-suited for smaller properties, typically growing at a moderate pace over time to 15 to 25 feet tall and wide. It typically has several trunks, which makes it seem like a large shrub for many years, until it matures into a taller plant that is clearly a tree. It is, of course, a relative of the evergreen southern magnolia, famed for its beautiful white blooms in late spring, and one of the symbols of gardening in the South. Another relative is the pretty star magnolia, a shrub or small tree with frilly petals on its early blooms. The plant prospers in acidic soil, enhanced with organic matter, such as compost, and will grow in part shade to full sun. As with most trees and shrubs, it prefers well-drained soil with even moisture through the year. As it is deciduous, meaning the leaves drop in autumn, but the silhouette left behind is striking because of the branching habit that begins low on the trunks, spreading horizontally in a graceful manner. The flowers, depending on the variety, may be pink, white, purple, or burgundy, but most of what we see are all pink or pink and white. Their shape leads some people to name it tulip magnolia. Though remarkably carefree, the early blooms of saucer magnolias, typically 3 to 5 inches in diameter, may be harmed by a sudden deep freeze in early March. That has happened to a few times to my saucer, a variety named Alexandrina, which has been growing for more than 35 years. There is, of course, no way to cover a big plant as you would a hydrangea facing a deep freeze in April. But it is a risk worth taking, doesn't happen too often, and should not discourage you from choosing this great plant. Some of the newer hybrids bloom a bit later and should accept such freezes. And now for Ask Nancy. Question. I want a dramatic but small plant for my desk. Some things I see are rather blah. Any ideas? Answer. Though it is a philodendron, Prince of Orange is far from ordinary. The new foliage is a beautiful orange, which contrasts nicely with the older, deep green foliage. Give it bright, indirect light. Water it about once a week, allowing the soil to dry out a bit between watering. Should the leaves turn pale, move to a less bright location. And next, from the State-by-State Gardening e-newsletter, Starting Veggies Indoors by Rita Randolph. Spring is around the corner, and even though I caution folks about planting and seeding too early in the season, truthfully, it's safe to go ahead and start a few things indoors. Choose the varieties recommended for your area and read how long it takes to produce each crop. Some may not take as long as others. For instance, lettuces can be directly sown into containers and grow quickly in cooler temperatures, yet tomatoes benefit from seeding in one container at a warm temperature and then transplanted to a larger container to grow a better root system before being put into the ground. Squash, cucumbers, and melons are faster crops and like to be sown closer to planting time. Sow multiple seed directly into 3 or 4 inch pots and, once developed, directly plant them into the garden. Reputable seed companies all offer specific information about each type of vegetable or plant they offer. Some offer better information than others, and I depend on these as a guide. Check the varieties for how large they grow. For instance, determinate bush tomatoes do not take as much room as indeterminate vine varieties. Store your seed tightly closed in a refrigerator, not a freezer, when not in use. Many varieties last for years if stored properly. To garden indoors or start your plants inside, the first thing to do is dedicate an area for this purpose. Find a south-facing window because it provides the most light for ensuring healthy starts. If not a south window, select the brightest one you have. You can always move plants away if it becomes too hot to handle. You need a sturdy table for seeding and related equipment. Cover it with plastic so moisture won't ruin the surface. Then set up a stand with a fluorescent light fixture or two for your plants after they begin to grow. There are grow lights of all kinds, but fluorescents are cool lights and still provide the wide spectrum necessary to keep seedlings and other plants from stretching. You needn't turn on the lights yet. Wait until after the seeds germinate. A leggy plant is not a healthy one, and you might as well purchase new plants or start over if stretching becomes a problem. Next, you need a heat source under the trays for the root systems to develop. Heating mats for this purpose are available in all sizes and prices. It's a good investment if you keep your home or growing area cool. The rooting zone of most vegetable and annual seedlings should be 68 to 78 degrees Fahrenheit, and uniform heating is best. Begin with a tray that acts as a capturing device for water and does not drain indoors. You can remove excess water with a sponge if it builds up. This will prevent spills on the floor and furniture and may help keep humidity levels up in the growing area. Place a capillary mat in the tray you plan to set your seeded pots in. A capillary mat is a spongy fiber about a quarter inch thick. When you water your pots, this mat will wick away excess moisture from some containers while providing it for others. It makes watering more uniform through the system, keeping plants moist but not wet. Seed that's germinating do not like to stay constantly wet. After sowing seeds in trays, place them on the capillary mat inside the tray that does not have holes. Then water in well with a sprayer or spray bottle. A light spray is best. Be sure to wet the capillary mat too, but not soak it to the point of water pooling. Sow seeds thinly in your pots. Overcrowding will result in stretched, unhealthy seedlings. The more room you give them, the better your plants will turn out. Cover seeds only as deep as the seed is in diameter. Small seeds only need a dusting of mix. Be careful not to bury your seeds, or they may not come up at all. Label your seed as you sow with a waterproof pin. After seeding and watering them in, cover the tray with another tray, preferably black or dark in color, balancing it on top of the other like a lid. The tray will hold in humidity and shut out light, as well as keep the warmth in from your heating mat. I usually cover the seeded trays with a sheet of plastic to chamber the trays. Check your seeds a couple of times a day for moisture, being careful not to let them dry out or remain too wet. Remove the lids on the trays as soon as the first two leaves appear. As soon as most seeds have germinated, turn on the lights. Keep the lights a foot or two away from the young plants so they don't dry out too quickly. As the plants mature, you might want to lower the fixture a little closer. Check frequently for drying out or wilting too much. Try not to water in the evening hours, since wet foliage overnight is a disease waiting to happen. This extra light not only helps keep plants short and healthy, but also helps to prevent many waterborne diseases and stem rot. When young seedlings are an inch or two tall, it's time to decide if they will be planted out into the ground, transplanted into larger pots, or hardened off for later. Reducing the average temperatures, withholding some water, and yet still maintaining high light conditions will accomplish this hardening. You can do this indoors or take them outside on good days, placing them in a partial shade location so they don't sunburn. Be sure to bring them back indoors on chilly nights below 57 degrees Fahrenheit. When transplanting young seedlings, the stem is sometimes buried up to the first set of true leaves. Be careful not to pack soil mixes too tightly around the necks of these young plants, as they might bruise easily. Simply lift the soil up around their necks and water in. At this point, I choose a weakened half dose of water-soluble fertilizer or root stimulator. An organic, water-soluble solution is also a good choice to add beneficial microelements and get them off to a great start. Keep plants under lights until they go outside, and be sure to stay on top of watering needs until established in the garden. Record keeping is really important if you ever hope to be successful at growing your own plants. Keeping notes of the date sown, plant variety, how many seeds you sowed, and when they matured enough to transplant will really help you with timing your crops each year. Now from the Farmer's Almanac, Compost Pile Basics by Barbara Delbault. What? You don't have a compost pile? Let's fix that. It's a simple way to cook up a nutrient-rich amendment for your garden, and it takes up practically no space at all. First, find an easy-to-access spot in your yard, such as an unused corner. The compost unit can be as basic as the name implies, a pile, or it can be gathered in a container crafted of used pallets. If you prefer something more commercial, purchase a compost bin or a compost tumbler. Next, toss in your organic waste. These can be leaves, yard trimmings, grass clippings, coffee grounds, pine needles, tea bags, and shredded paper. Do not add meat, dairy products, grease, pet feces, or diseased plants, as they can be difficult to compost, or worse, hazardous to the health of both you and your garden. Composting basics include chopping up leaves and other yard debris to speed up decomposition, mixing in brown, sawdust, shredded paper, pine needles, with shredded green, weeds, vegetable scraps, lawn clippings, and then keeping the mixture moist. Turning the pile occasionally, like stirring a pot of stew, will keep things cooking as the decomposing materials give off heat while breaking down. The more you add material and moisture and mix your pile, the more quickly you will produce compost. With frequent attention, it can take as little as 3 to 8 months to create ready-to-use compost. For a just-let-it-be pile, it will take about a year. And now from the Triangle Gardener magazine. 7 annuals and tender perennials that will change your garden. First of all, what the heck is a DWU? I just made that up. It's from the common reference book phrase, deserves wider use. That's what's said when a plant has ornamental or edible value and does really well in the garden, but for some reason people do not plant it much. As with most plant lists, this list could be much longer, but I'm aiming to offer a sampling of plants that are sufficiently different from each other in color, form, and uses, and which are also fairly new to nurseries, not seen as often as they should be in the gardens, or are just too stinking cool to leave out. TSC for short. I'm full of acronyms, apparently. First out of the gate is Funky Pink Begonia. File this new, because even though begonias are nothing new under the sun, it is a newer hybrid. Funky Pink has a trailing habit that makes it excellent for hanging baskets and container gardens. It erupts with masses of lovely, fluffy, double-form shell pink blooms through summer. Breeding for begonias has been unbelievable in the last 20-plus years, with more and more fabulousness being introduced regularly. If you like Funky Pink, look for varieties in the following series. Glowing Embers, Million Kisses, Rise Up, Bellagio, Sparkle, Bon Bon, Angel Falls, and more. Most of these varieties are heat tolerant. Thank you, plant breeders. And do well in dappled shade or morning sun with afternoon shade. Next up is a hot little mama that looks so cool. Cool because of its broad leaves of silvery white and velvety, inviting texture. It's Senecio, S-E-N-E-C-I-O, Angel Wings, which is related to the well-known Dusty Miller. Next to its silvery leaves, hot colors pop, while cool colors harmonize. The sharp color contrasts and huge leaves of angel wings make it a plant with major wow factor. While it's perfect for mixed plantings, this is a plant that can take the spotlight alone, too. Full sun and good drainage is best for this plant. One plant I would put in front of angel wings, or anywhere I could find a spot for it, would be Evening Sensation Petunia. I know most of us have heard of petunias, but this one is fragrant both during the day, but especially at night. Plant it near an outdoor seating area where you can hang out on a summer evening and enjoy it. The color is splendid, a glowing twilight periwinkle blue with a bit of lavender. It just speaks of champagne and moonlight. Abutilon, A-B-U-T-I-L-O-N, has been around for ages but deserves wider use. Also called flowering maple due to the shape of its leaves, Abutilon produces lovely flowers that remind us of hibiscus but cupped downward into a bell shape or a flared skirt. Flower colors include candy pink, buttery gold, apricot, white, and pale yellow. Some are actually hardy enough to come through winter, and some are best grown as annuals or in pots and brought inside for the winter. They actually make decent houseplants. Springing up like a delicious bouquet of bright red gumdrops is Strawberry Fields Globe Amaranth. though they do look like strawberries, too. There's so much to love here. Heat and humidity tolerance, prolific flowering on strong stems, long-lasting blooms, and wonderful visual contrast next to many other flowers because of the unique shape. Plant in full sun, in a well-drained soil, or at least in an area that tends to stay dry. Lime Sizzler Firebush heats up the landscape with striking foliage and pretty flowers. This newbie struts out into the summer sun with shocking gold, chartreuse, and green variegated foliage, tipped in cherry and topped with clusters of dark coral tubular flowers, beloved by hummingbirds and butterflies. It is pollinator-friendly, heat and humidity tolerant, with a handsome, compact, bushy habit. Grow it in the sunny summer border, where it will look wonderful next to plants with burgundy foliage or purple flowers. If you're into the unusual, you must try a few Rex begonias. While some begonias are known for flowers, these are all about leaves. Leaves that are varied and fascinating, that glimmer with iridescence, and are swirled, flecked, dotted, and painted with burgundy, green, pink, red, and silver. Some look like fabulous nautilus shells. Others are shaped like maple leaves or little dragon wings. Plant these in shade where they will steal the show. Grown in containers, they can be brought indoors for winter for enjoyment and safekeeping from the cold, and then taken outdoors again in late spring. And from the Triangle Gardener magazine, Plants of the Year. Each year, top plant organizations name the top plant, and winners are: National Garden Bureau proclaimed 2018 as the year of the tulip. Who doesn't love these paint box colored blooms, a visual feast for winter weary eyes? They also named Calabrochia, Coreopsis, and beets as top plants. The Perennial Plant Association has picked Allium Millennium as its perennial plant of the year. This relative to the onion is a workhorse of the late summer garden, with masses of rose purple blooms, neat, shiny green foliage, and drought resistance. Closer to home, the Maryland Golden Aster has been named the 2018 North Carolina Wildflower of the Year by the North Carolina Botanical Garden and the Garden Club of North Carolina. Rounding out the plants is hops, the International Herb Association's Herb of the Year. The fragrant flowers of hops attract butterflies. Plus, it can be used in medicinal, cosmetic, and, of course, beer making. Now from Jerry Baker's terrific Garden Tonics. If you don't have the patience to go through your house every few days sticking your finger into the soil of your houseplants to see if they need watering, I've got the answer for you. In a word, pine cones. Yep, these are Mother Nature's own moisture meters. Just stick a fresh pine cone about 2 petals deep into the soil of each of your potted plants. The petals of the cone open when the plant is dry and close when it's wet, so there's no more wondering when it's time to water. This article by Nancy Brakey. Spring tasks await. Let's get going. Thanks to wet, chilly days recently, some gardening tasks normally finished by now remain undone. Fortunately, longer days and better weather will give us all a chance to catch up and get ahead as spring unfolds in all its glory. The next month, however, is critical for certain tasks. Perhaps you have noticed that some perennials such as clumps of chrysanthemums, daylilies, and Shasta daisies, already show signs of fresh growth. This is a truly cheerful sight, and the plants should benefit from an application of garden fertilizer. Most perennials are best dug and divided after flowering, but if yours seem especially crowded, consider dividing and replanting them now. Take care to water them regularly as the small plants develop new roots and shoots. What fun that is to watch! Look, too, for seedlings of Lenten roses that have sprouted, grown nicely, and are ready for transplanting to a permanent spot. Vegetables, too, deserve your time, space, and effort. Young plants of leaf lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, and cabbage are in garden centers, ready for planting. These vegetables grow beautifully in the cool days of early spring and will reward you with good food. You must not fret that they will get overchilled because all are quite hardy. This is also a way to get your garden working before tomato time arrives in late April. And who can stifle their eagerness for that moment? And certainly, this is planting time for roses and azaleas. Garden centers offer roses in pots that make it easy to transplant without disturbing the roots. Some are sold in plastic bags, their roots wrapped in damp moss. Azaleas are coming into bloom, and some gardeners want to see the color of the flowers before they buy plants. Woody plants, such as shrubs and roses planted now, will require close attention to watering during the hot, dry weeks that will surely come this summer. Other plants, whether young or established, will benefit from fertilizer applied now, just as the growing season begins. This is a nice task for twilight time. Just rake back the mulch. Then, following the guidelines for amount stated on the fertilizer package label, sprinkle the product over the root zone. If you are fertilizing a large plant, sprinkle the fertilizer just below the outer edge of the shrub's canopy. This is where most of the feeder roots are growing. Pansies that have grown all winter in a flower bed or container will benefit now from removal of spent blooms, a process called deadheading. A light application of fertilizer formulated for flowers will also help them rev up for a good season of new bloom through the spring. They have many weeks of good bloom ahead before it is time to replace them with summer flowers.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.